This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mokhtar in studio today with Wong Xiaoning and Philip C. But as always, we're going to start our morning with a recap on how global markets ended trading yesterday.
Nespresso, bringing you the perfect blend of global market analysis and insights.
And it was a lovely green day in the US. The Dow was actually up 1.1%. S&P was up 1.6%. NASDAQ, which did see some heavy selling earlier in the week, recovered all its losses, apparently. It's up 2.2%. Meanwhile, in Asia, a bit of a mixed day. Nikkei was up 0.1%. Hang Seng down 0.9%. Shanghai was down 0.4%. Singapore was also down 0.2%. But we managed to close in the green, up very marginally by 0.1%.
So for insights into what's moving global markets, we have on the line Vishnu Varathan, Head of Economics and Strategy at Mizuho Bank. Vishnu, good morning. Now, the Fed concluded their much-anticipated policy meeting last night. Is the market ready for a more hawkish tone?
Yeah, I mean, it appears not only were they ready, they were quite receptive of it as well. As you just said, markets closed up. And I think partly that may be due to the confidence behind the more hawkish Fed. So in doubling their pace of taper, now the Fed is ready to wind down the quantitative easing program by March, and that leaves them room to start the rate hikes sooner. And the so-called dot plot suggests that the Fed is now pricing in three rate hikes, or the median of the poll is pricing in three rate hikes for 2022 and another three in 2023. The reason why anyone would celebrate rate hikes, which seems counterintuitive here, is that the Fed has expressed quite a bit of optimism, quite a bit of optimism about growth and the jobs market recovery. B, they have downplayed the risks from Omicron. And C, they have thrown in the usual caveat and say, look, this faster pace of taper and all of that is going to be contingent on outcomes, which is to say they're ready to pull back on the tightening pace if need be.
Okay, Vishnu, I want to continue this conversation in terms of what the Feds were thinking when they came out with this decision. How much do you think inflation was in their minds when they decided they were going to be a little bit more hawkish and not be so expansionary in their monetary policy?
At the risk of being a little tongue-in-cheek, I would say inflation was the obsession. So to be fair, I'm not saying they lost sight of the jobs growth thing. With jobs, I think they're quite confident of the recovery, and they've been for a while now, since the last few statements made by them. And the caveat there is they don't know how soon labour market participation will come in. And a big flip here is them having to reassure markets that they don't see wage price spirals from a so-called hot labour market. So, in fact, the job story now is turning into, don't worry, it's not going to cause the kind of inflation spiral upwards. Whereas I think they conceded that they were earlier a little slow on inflation. So part of the three rate hikes being priced in right now from no clear hikes for 22 earlier is an expression of them saying that we are doing catch up and we're now ahead of the curve. So it was almost all about inflation. That was the star of the show.
Yeah, so they've consigned the word transitory to the annals of history and now replaced it with elevated. The question is, how long is this going to be elevated for inflation? And my question to you then also is, do you think the center rally is in the cards?
It appears that way. It appears that we would probably see a little bit of center rally. What could, however, either hold it back or the conditions for that to fall in place is, as we head into the center rally, I think we'll also see more clarity on the studies done on Omicron coming forward. There would be a bit of dissonance there because we do see restrictions being stepped up in the UK. So there could be some caution that underlines it. The other thing is valuations are fairly rich right now. So the scope to go in very aggressively rather than to lock in profits for the year, I think that comes to a cost-benefit trade-off depending on positioning. So I would say there would be a modest rally into the close, but certainly not with abandon.
Now, Vishnu, Bank of England rate decision on Thursday, ECB rate decision on Thursday as well, Bank of Japan on Friday. So a lot of big central banks having announcements with regards to their monetary policy. Do you see a synchronized monetary policy this time round, though?
Absolutely not. one, I mean, it's just one channel separating them, but there will be a world of difference between the Bank of England and the ECB. I think the Bank of England, in fact, the bets are that they may have to move on the rate hike now. And they do see far more persistent inflationary pressures, not just due to the pandemic effect, but also due to the fact that, you know, their exit from the European Union closes off the labour market flows, the jobs, you know, job-seeking migrants into the UK. The only thing that could hold them back is Omicron. So now it's just about how they view Omicron risk, but the underlying hawkish tone is very clear. Whereas for the ECB, I think they're still going to take the dovish tone and say downside risks from the variant, as well as an incomplete recovery, an uneven recovery means that they are not going to touch hikes anytime soon. And on tapering, that will even be a mixed message, because whatever goes off in the pandemic purchase program, they could partly compensate for it from their usual asset purchase program. So quite different trajectories, at least for the first half of 2022, for these two central banks. The BOJ will be the most unequivocally dovish, even though the price increases are quite a bit of a worry. The ultimate risk from that is something that's going to be deflationary in terms of consumption. So the BOJ is nowhere near the BOE or the Fed in terms of their tilt.
And what about the PBOC, Vishnu? Because the PBOC seems to be increasing liquidity through an injection of 500 billion yuan, which they did on Wednesday. Is China more concerned about growth than inflation?
I think China, in all likelihood, is not at all concerned about inflation. Part of the pickup that we saw in the PPI, I mean, that was almost a parallel for the US PPI, where it also hit close to 30-year highs. I think they're not at all concerned, because their power crunch is fading. They're taking all the steps necessary, whereas the kind of regulatory tightening, including the property market, has created very distinct, albeit tail risks of a hard landing. So the PBOC, and I stand corrected, the most diametric opposite is not the Bank of England and the ECB, could arguably be the Fed and the PBOC in this case. And I think they're going to shore up, but they're not going to write out blank checks either, because I think the one key distinction we want to make here is their post-GFC lesson is that the credit ramp-up was too excessive, so that they're going to refrain from that, but certainly they're in easing mode.
Okay, and I want to bring this conversation back to where you are, Vishnu, in Singapore. I want to know whether, you know, what is your view with regards to the Singapore dollar against the USD? I mean, is the Monetary Authority of Singapore comfortable with the current effective exchange rate? I mean, it started the year at 132 and now we're at 136. Is that where the band is going to be?
In fact, you know, our own estimate, and this is, of course, not revealed deliberately as a policy tool, but our measure is that the trade-weighted Singapore dollar is towards the rich side of the policy band. Is the MAS happy with where it is? I think as long as it's within the policy bands, they are fairly agnostic about it. Are they comfortable with the slight appreciation bias that they've put in place since October? I think absolutely. If there's any change made in our view, earlier we had thought they would pause in April and then steepen, that's to pick up the underlying pace of appreciation in October next year. But we've actually brought that forward to April. And October next year, we think they're going to pause. So if anything, we should see a slightly stronger trade-weighted Singapore dollar bias being priced in. But because it's at the rich side of the band, it may not translate so neatly into the dollar sing. And the dollar sing will mainly be a product and an expression of the overarching dollar trend.
Vishnu, thank you as always for the chat this morning. That was Vishnu Varathan, Head of Economics and Strategy at Mizuho Bank, giving us his take on the trends moving markets, including the latest decision by the Fed in terms of their tapering and rate hike schedule, and capping it off as on a look at the Singapore dollar trends moving forward.
Yeah, and I want to stay on our neighbours down south, right, talk about them, because they're actually going to cool down the property market, right? Because there's been an increase in home prices over the past year. So they have introduced a new round of property curbs for both private and public residential markets. So for second home buyers and foreigners who are purchasing private units, additional stamp duties will be raised. And for public housing apartment, loan limits will be tightened starting today. You know, Singapore, for them, I think Because property is a store of wealth, right? And it's also the case for Malaysia. It's that delicate balance whereby you don't want to burst the bubble, but you also want to ensure that your citizens or people who live there can still afford to buy housing. I mean, houses, right?
We've been talking about supply chain for such a long time. I think Singapore has always had this big problem of supply chain disruption, which is the equivalent of housing because there's so insufficient land. You look at the data, third quarter GDP numbers, 7.1%. People are worried that the economy might be overheating, right? Mm. And as they saw in the first data, private home prices have been rising about 9% after a six-year decline. Price to the secondary market for public housing has increased by around 50% 6 year. So you know, talk about supply chain disruption, that is classic Singapore property market.
And shockingly, right, for the first half of 2021, there were 32.9 billion Sing dollars in sales, which is double that recorded in New York, okay, in Manhattan. And I think it's partially due to the fact that interest rates in Singapore are extremely, extremely low, right? So, and you know, there's a question of where can you park your money? What are the asset classes available to you? And yes, Singapore is an international market. You can buy almost anything, but property still remains very attractive, even though your yields may be extremely low, so like 3%. But the differential is still something that you're willing to bet on, especially since property prices have been on a one-way track up.
Nespresso starts your morning right together with the Morning Run, bringing you the perfect blend of global market insights with expert guests.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.